Welcome back to the podcast. I don't think I've ever had two guests on at the same time, but when we're talking about a friend mountain goat hunt, it seems appropriate to have both of you on here. So thanks, Melissa, for being back on here, and welcome to the podcast, Nani.
Yeah, it's good timing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Melissa, you turned an age. Was it yesterday that you had your birthday?
It was Sunday.
Okay, Sunday was your birthday, and what was the birthday? It was seemed like it was a very uniquely Alaskan experience.
Yeah, so I get actually a lot of my ideas from some patients, but I had some patients that had done some ski trips out into Prince William Sound. Some people have their own boats, some people have taken water taxis, and I've been talking about doing it for a couple of years now. And so anyway, I was like, oh, that'd be fun. And then it's kind of a logistical trip, and going out of Prince William Sound, the weather has to be just right. So took a chance, found a cabin that somebody recommended, rented it, and like 6 weeks ago, and booked a water taxi for like a Friday through Monday trip. And just crossed our fingers that the weather was going to behave, and it didn't.
Of
So,
course.
yeah, exactly. In fashion of Whittier weather, we got delayed by the wind for Friday, and we checked in like twice Friday trying to go, didn't work. And then just like, okay, check in at 7. Checked in at 7, and it was still blowing like 37 out of Whittier, and just like check in at 10. At this point, we're like, okay, well, if it doesn't work, it's beautiful in Anchorage. Let's maybe go do something else. Go ski turn again, or go to Hatcher's Pass. And so, then I called her at 10:08, and she's like, "If you can be in Whittier on the 11:30 tunnel, we can make it happen." The winds came down, so we throw all our stuff in the car, like a haul out of town, and got there to the tunnel with a few minutes to spare. And then we took like a, I think it was about 25-foot landing craft, and it was nice packing a bunch of gear for a big cabin trip in a boat, and haven't done that in a while. And then we went about 18 miles outside of Whittier to Cochrane Bay, and yeah, we got to see all types of weather over the weekend. We called it the 50 Shades of Whittier because we had blue sky. Like the trip out there after we got out of Whittier was flat calm, and it was beautiful. And then we skied that day, got in a little bit of fresh powder above the cabin, and then that night it dumped like 10 inches of some a little bit heavier powder. And the next day we got to ski that, which was it was a hard set, my skin track in that heavy powder, but once you got out away from the beach, the powder got lighter. And so we got on top and just got these amazing views of Prince William Sound. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, that was a Forest Service cabin, right? Yeah, that's
So
such an Alaska thing to do. Whenever a birthday is coming up, people are like, hey, let's go to the cabin or let's go to some beach somewhere. It's so much more fun than, well, I guess it's perspective, of course, but such a great Alaska thing to do. Get some buddies and go to the cabin.
No, it was so much fun. And the fact that we could ski from the cabin, you like walked behind the outhouse, put on your skis, and like skied from the cabin. It was pretty cool.
Nice.
So,
Was that a wood burning cabin or heating oil, or what do they have there?
it was a kerosene stove.
Okay.
So if it had been a little colder, I don't know how comfortable that would have been. It didn't get that hot, but no insulation, of course, in those cabins, but
Yeah, they converted a lot of the ones on Prince of Wales from wood burning to that heating oil or that the kerosene stuff, and it's they switched a lot of them back because it was just easier to get a hold of firewood out there. And some of those, it's so much nicer because you can just put a ton of wood in there, get the thing smoking hot, and then someone wakes up in the middle of the night and it's still warm-ish, but they're cold enough that they'll put in a couple logs, and it's pretty nice. But the fees keep going up, but it's still a pretty good experience. You don't get the Wi-Fi or continental breakfast, but 60, 70 bucks seems like a little bit much, but it's still pretty fun.
No, we had a blast. We went all out too. We brought the little C Coleman camping stove. They bought New York steaks.
Oh,
We had
wow.
balloons with the like candles. It was fun. Yeah, we made a party out of it.
Yeah,
So
there's you can bring your freeze-dried meals, but bringing that Coleman stove and cooking some real food, that's real
yeah,
nice.
especially after a long day of like skiing, you're kind of cold and damp and skiing, and it's like, oh, that's nice to eat a hot meal.
Yeah. The beef stroganoff is okay every once in a while, but yes, steaks in the winter is how you want to go.
Yeah, I haven't had like not be conscious about packing something on my back for hunting or like the airplane weight. So it's so nice to be able to camp and it's like, man, throw that in, throw that
Bring it
in, throw
all.
it in. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So, I guess that's a pretty good transition. So this mountain goat hunt that you two went on, your weight regulation was due to the fact that you flew in. So, how did that first packing go, and how, what was the invitation like? How did that trip come together?
Well, I got the tag for that Marcus Baker mountain goat tag. And Nani and I have been talking for years trying to make specifically a mountain hunt trip together because her and I share a love for the mountains and
the type two fun where it is going to be a hell of a hike. It's going to be heavy.
But we love
But
it.
we love it. Like we both, if there's not an ounce of suck, it's not worth it to go in our minds. And our husbands are the exact opposite, where they want all of like my husband loves beach cruising for bears because it's efficient, it's fun, you're still gonna be outside. But that would he would if he had to pick one mode of hunting, it would probably be beach cruising for bears. Whereas I'm like, I want to go up to the Alpine, the tallest mountain. And so we both have always wanted to do a mountain hunt because we both enjoy like that rush of like,
The really hard work is so worth it at the end.
My wife was like that too. When we got up to a mountain goat spot, and we spotted one, but we just got to the ridge, and so I was kind of smoked. Looked across and saw a mountain goat, and I thought, okay, let's just see what happens. She said, "Let's get over there. This is what we came here for." And I thought, all right, here we're going. Yeah,
And
it was
we're going.
super hot, but yeah, I made it over there and made it happen. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, it's I feel like when you're doing those types of hunts, it's nice to have two people that are kind of on the similar page of like what are we how far are we willing to push together? 'Cause it changes the dynamic if somebody's like, "Eh, I don't really want to go up that high or I don't want to go up that through all that alder for that just go." So I knew Nani was a really good partner for this. And so she didn't even hesitate when I texted her. I was like,
Nice.
sweet.
So the fly-in part, somewhat tricky. I know the last time you were on the podcast, or the last time that we talked, you talked about, just making sure that you're super comfortable and really good with the area and landings and takeoffs, and really, really confident in there. So, that preparation, how did that go? And then, how did the flyout go?
Yeah, so I spent a lot of the summer. I'd go after work and I would just hammer out landings after landings. And I think by the time I went in to do that hunt, I had over like 650 landings or something. And it's just like was getting my repetition of being able to like land short and landing exactly where you want to land. This strip was about 1,000 feet long, which is plenty of long, I guess, but it does have a couple big bumps in it. And you really want to be nice and slow because otherwise those bumps can really, I've heard some airplanes have gotten into trouble down there. So spent a lot of the summer practicing. I even hired my instructor to help me go back there and just kind of walk me through everything off airport landings. And so I felt really kind of comfortable going in there when Nani showed up for Labor Day weekend. And I told her, I was like, you can't judge this landing. You can't judge me as a pilot because it's got two big whoops that like launch you in the air. And I was like, they're not comfortable. My husband likes to give me jokes that after I was landing in there that he had to replace the light bulbs on the plane. it was a lot of prep. And I was talking to a friend about this. Like, it's one thing to fly yourself into those places, but when you're starting to like take family and friends, I even want to feel even more prepared. I
Right.
want to, I want this to be a good experience for both of us. So I felt like I was really prepared going in there. But then when we went to go fly in, of course, like there was a plane on one end of the runway. So I had never landed one way. So we kind of were stuck with a position where it was like, okay, we're doing a little something different, which isn't always the most comfortable feeling. But yeah, the flying, did we get delayed a day?
We did. We had to stay another extra day in Anchorage because
We
of
did.
wind.
Yeah. And that was really hard because that was a good example of an external pressure of like, as a pilot, of The winds were, it was beautiful. It was like blue sky, I think. But the winds were pretty bad. And I think they were blowing. My personal minimum, I think, was 20. And I believe it was blowing like 25, 30. And so it was kind of like, it's not worth it to bang us up or an airplane just because we want to get out there. And so we ended up waiting a day. We went to the shooting range. Killed some time. And then we got out there, I want to say a Saturday.
Yeah, I think so.
Saturday morning. We tried to go early that next day. And I took Nani in first, right? Or did I take the gear in
I think
first?
you did a gear run
I did
first
a
and
gear
then you
run
came
in.
back.
Yes, that's right. And then I came back and got you. Yeah. So I did a gear run and it took us about an hour, maybe an hour and a half. Go drop the gear. Kim got her. But on our way in, we did like a lap around the valley, kind of looking at what we were gonna go after, basically. And we had this plan after a bunch of Google searching and Google Earth. We were wanting to hunt the left side of this valley. Well, that was gonna work until we went in there, and there was one plane on the strip that we were gonna land, and there was also another Super Cub that was in an area that I would not put my plane on the left side of. Up by the glacier. So we were like, okay, well, now we're going to change plans here. So we did a couple laps around the valley, and there was a group of two goats up way at the head of the glacier, and probably, no, actually it was 2 miles up the glacier, and then up on the right on a ridge. And we're like, oh, actually that's in a doable spot. And we made a kind of a game plan, took a bunch of pictures from the plane. And but we were still kind of thinking about the left side. Okay, well, what do we do? So we end up landing. We set up our Hilberg that day and kind of get all settled. And we're like, well, what should we just decided, I think, to go for it that day. We're like, we're just gonna we need to get up river because this is a couple mile jaunt up the river towards the glacier. There was a couple airstrips up there, but yeah, my capability in our plane is not ready for that. So
What type of plane do you have?
it's a Taylor craft.
Okay, and what's the size?
It's got 100 horsepower and no flaps, but it's got a really long wing, which really helps it. So it's got a lot of capability, especially when there's one person in there. But the moment you start adding weight, it really starts to cut down on what you can do. So anyway, we can we like we said, we set up our Hilberg at the strip, and we were like, well, we're gonna just see how far we can get today. And we had brought a what's that tent called? A mini med. Like, I think you have one actually, Jeff. I've seen the ultralight by
Hyperlight.
Hyperlight. That Hyperlight pyramid tent you have?
Oh, I have a seat outside with the stove.
Oh, maybe the tent. I for sure thought you had
It is a teepee tent, but I have it's one of the ones seat outside with the stove in it.
Gotcha.
I don't have like one of those alpine type ones.
Yeah, this
So
is.
similar, it's super lightweight. It doesn't like have a floor or anything. So we borrowed that with the intent of cutting an animal under it, and just in case sleeping under it. But once I think we realized that the goats on the right side that we decided to go after were a couple miles past the goats on the left side that we had kind of initially thought we were going to go after. So we changed plans, and now we're like, all right, we're going to be sleeping under this mini med that we borrowed from my boss. So we made a really fun hike up the glacier that day. Not talk about the hike up the glacier.
Oh yeah. So, well, I think before we decided on the right, we were still in the mindset like to hunt the left side because that was like all the
That's right.
reports we had gotten was like go on the left, like it's way better hiking, like you can actually get to the goats a lot easier. So like try to get on the left side, which involves a river crossing. So
That's
we
right.
like hike a ways past the plane, and we're scooting along, and then we get to the river, and
I
it's
have my pack raft too.
oh yes, we
We
get
had
one.
planned to pa cross this river with my pack raft.
Yeah, and Melissa had just gotten back from like a week-long float where all she did was pack raft and took like all these classes. So she's kind of has some good experience. I have none. Melissa, I would say she's kind of the daredevil, like adrenaline junkie. I feel like I would not consider myself an adrenaline junkie, but so this whole trip I felt like the worry wart. So no. It was a good balance.
She's good balance.
So we get down to the river and it is just
it's raging. The week before it, we had a bunch of rain and it flooded.
Yeah. So I mean it was like I want to say it was like 2 foot like white capping river gushing. Like it was just that muddy, just nasty. And I took one look and I was like, there's no way we were crossing it. So Melissa had like some hope. And I was like,
there's just a little higher. Make like, it a little higher.
There's no way we're crossing this safely. Like we're gonna get drenched. This thing's gonna tip. We don't have life jackets, we don't have helmets. There's no safe way to cross it. So anyways, we like are like, let's just keep going up. Maybe it'll mellow out. So we like are walking on the riverbed, because if you go out of the riverbed, you're in a field of alders that are thicker than heck. Bad so it's like alders. Your only choice is to walk the riverbed.
Which is like those big rocks that are, you know, those glacier rocks that don't have kind of stability. Yeah. There was a couple falls, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Melissa on the way out almost took a good spill.
Yeah, and I think I lost Nani's Crocs in the midst of falling or something. Yeah, the Crocs went down the river. So I still owe you a pair of those.
No, that's okay. we finally got to the point where like we keep going and we're like looking at the map, like on Onyx, trying to figure out like where the river like gets a little bit wider. Maybe it'll mellow out. And we just kept going and going and going. And we're like, no, I think we're going to be set to this right side. Like there's no way we're crossing this. So we end up just following the riverbed for like, I think it was like 3 miles.
It took us a couple hours.
And there was one point where we came to like this rock face where you could not skirt along the rock face on the river. Kind of like, there's no way you're going around it. So we had to go up and around this like cliff. So that involved like swimming through alders, going up this cliff, and then having to basically like a controlled climb descent down like this muddy
she's bank. Got this hilarious video of us crawling through the alders, and it was like, oh, we haven't fun yet.
And then so it was pretty, but thankfully we were able to like get around it and then get back onto the river and keep going. So I think it took us several hours. So by the time we got to like the head of the glacier, it was we had just enough time to get the tent kind of set up,
and we like wrapped around that last part of the glacier, and we're like started like getting so excited because we weren't sure if we were actually going to be able to make it up the entire riverbed. So and then of course we get up there and the water had just like completely flat calm at the top, which we didn't end up using that river, but
no, there were guys camp. We could see guys like had a fire. Their plane, they pretty much landed right at the base of where they would like go after a goat. So they had it. They had it pretty. Yeah. Great. They had a sweet spot.
So they drew the same tag, or they had the same tag.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And it had opened the day before. So I think they just got there.
Makes sense.
They had a super cab to get in there. So. But we saw them looking up at the goats that we had seen on the left side. So we're like, all right, I guess the right side it is. So.
Going back to this tent. So we're like pulling.
We've never used one.
I feel like we were very prepared in so many ways. Like we had all the necessities we needed, but we made a rookie mistake of like not setting up a tent that you've never used before ahead of time.
Right.
And it seems so intuitive.
It did. And it was just one of the kind, you know, you throw up with a trekking pole, there's a couple, you know, lines, you throw some rocks under and you're good. So we do that. And I mean, it
didn't look quite book right.
No, I mean, we get underneath it and the tent's just like caved in on your face. Every time you breathe in and out, the tent is just in your face. So we had this set up, we couldn't figure out what we were doing wrong. So we ended up just calling it good because it was getting dark.
We had to
break our trekking poles in half and like set them up in the corners so we'd have enough space so the tent wasn't draped over our sleeping bags because it was just so low. And Melissa woke up in a puddle. Rain
it was really gotten close. It was like an inch away, and I was like, don't move, we gotta get out from under this. I was gonna get flooded.
So it's like day one, you're already starting with the sleeping bag wet, which always like kind of makes me stressed. It's like, man, if we get into weather, like we're gonna be, this is gonna be really a we're gonna be hurting. We're not gonna be comfortable.
The next morning, I immediately messaged John the InReach, and I was like, "Can we have some instructions for this MediMid tent?" And he's like, "I think he said, lay it down flat first, then the pull up the middle. You need two poles." And we're like, "Two poles? Why didn't we think of that?"
Yeah.
So we had to learn the lesson.
Some of those are tough. I've seen a whole bunch of different ones, and the thing that about the trekking pole is that I'm always worried I'm going to like knock it over at night. And so the tent that we have, the Seek Outside one, with the it's the pole goes in the middle, and there's plenty of space around it, so you don't have to worry about that. But some of those ultralight tents, I love the fact that they're super light. But yeah, the trek, just the one trekking pole, some of them it's two, and a lot can go wrong. And if it is floorless, you know, around here, you get a lot of water coming in the sides. And then if you do have to make a fire, it can be really tough because everything is so saturated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could easily see how it could not be good for a lot of situations. So, yeah, we were really close to getting a lot wet, but we fixed it the next day. I think we had a croc, the pole in the croc, because we had like a tarp laid down and, yeah, we were like, what the heck? What did we think? What did we think? But we were tired, and anyway.
Yeah, so the next morning we woke up. I don't think we got after it super early. I can't remember.
We were waiting, so it was dumping rain that night, and the next day was supposed to be in and out, I think foggy and cloudy.
Yeah.
So we were kind of like, well, I think we waited to the rains to stop before we got out. We're like, let's wait till the rain stops. It was like 8 or something, but
yeah,
we got out in there was like a kind of a fog and cloud layer, like right in the top of the mountain, and it pushed away for a minute, and then for us to get the spotting scope on them, and we saw that those were the three that we had seen from the plane, and like it's not rainy at this point, but it's not, we can still see, and so I'm like, should we just go for it? And she's like, yeah, let's do it. So we're like, all right, we'll do our plan like we had talked about from the night before. Fine, we're gonna walk up along the glacier. I think it was another 2 miles along the glacier, and then traverse up this creekish, and we had to go through some alders, and then they were in a cliff band. And the nice thing about, we saw where they were, they're like, they were really low in the cliff band, so it was like shale underneath of them. So I was like, okay, that looks like a doable spot, not only to like get access, but like to where they fall to retrieve. So yeah, so we went for it. And
yeah, it was so nice being able to like figure out where you have access to even start going up the mountain, because it's near this glacier. I mean, there's every bank that you look at is like eroded and carved out. So like, there's not very many ways to get up.
Yeah,
from the bottom. So we, I think in my mind, picked like one of the only ways on the right side you could actually get up this mountain.
Safely, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, safely. A lot of that was eroded, huh, wasn't it?
Yeah, and on the way to get the three, we bumped into another group of three, and we were just like, there's no way we'd be able to get to these.
Yeah, they were like 300 yards away, just standing on a cliff staring at us. And we were like, not on a cliff, but there's no way, even if he fell, that like,
right,
it wouldn't have been a good move. So yeah, we ended up walking on the side of the glacier, which was like a little interesting because I haven't done a ton of glacier travel, and so it's like we're kind of hugging the bank and like, you know, we have to get around stuff, and I was like, okay, that's a huge hole into the glacier, like black ice, like avoid that. So it was a little interesting. It was like we just took our time and kind of clipped along the side there and got to the ridgeline that we were going to work to get up, and we like both look up at like these glacier or these alders, and it's like, all right, alder time.
Did you bring spikes or anything like that, or are you just in regular boots?
We did bring spikes, yeah,
yep,
because we used a pair of,
because I think I had a pair of micro spikes,
yes,
that we split. So she had one on one foot, I had one on the other foot, and then we split trekking poles because Melissa had the really nice kinds with the,
yeah, the black diamond makes like the whippet that's like, it's nice because it has like that kind of axe pick on the end to where if you fall or slide, or even that really steep. It was like that steep tundery stuff that like is kind of can be slippery, especially when it's wet. So that's what we use this micro spikes for.
Yeah.
And the whippet.
Yeah. So. Coming down that the micro spikes were helpful. But I want to say it took to get up to where the goats were. I want to say from where we set up base camp to get up there was probably 6 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I remember I think we shot it like around 3-ish or something. So
yeah. So it was a long,
yeah.
It took us a while.
And then going up the alders it was just steep and like just going up with a pack.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how that goes, like with a wide pack and you have a rifle
mm-hmm.
and it's like, oh, it was one step at a time. And now we're like a couple hours into it, so we're getting a little tired. And so we get up out of the alders finally and I'm like, okay, like it feels like we're making some progress. And we get into like above the tree line on that tundra stuff and we see the goats. And we're like, okay, well, like in sheep country you can't be seen. Like this is like what normally. And so we had brought painter suits and I was like, well, I've done this one other time to a goat and it seemed to work. And like we weren't chasing the goat, but we wanted to see what a goat would do. So I was like, let's put on our painter suits. So we put on our like painter suits looking so silly and we start getting through the tundra and we actually put eyes on them and we could see that they weren't facing us, which was like kind of a nice thing, but you could see them.
Yeah.
So then we get up and now we're kind of getting underneath them. So they go out of, we can't see them anymore. And so now we start kind of picking our way up the little bit of the shale and like the cliffy stuff and that kind of steep but hard rock that sometimes will crumble. So we picked through that for about, I don't know, another hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're to a point where like, there should be here somewhere. Like we're kind of trying to move slow. And, yeah, not go ahead.
Yeah, this is my part. Yeah, so we're like, you know, just side hilling your way up because it's so steep, so you can't go straight up. So it's just the side.
The calves are burning.
Yeah, we're just kind of, you know, side hilling, and I'm now like I made the mistake of glancing where we came from, and it is just it's like we're way up here. Like this is Melissa, granted, had just come from a sheep hunt where. You know, I'm just used to hiking around Southeast where you're in like nice, you know, alpiney tundra where you don't really have that fear. Like, oh yeah, this is steep, but very comfortable in Southeast alpine, not comfortable in Chugach Mountains where it's shale and steep. So I'm getting to the point where I'm like, Melissa, I don't know how much higher I can go. Like my stomach is starting to kind of drop a little bit. And I'm just thinking about how the heck we're going to get down. And so we get to this spot where there's actually like a goat bed. And so I like crawl up there and I'm kind of, my legs are starting to get a little wobbly and I'm like, oh man. So I'm like trying to calm myself down and I have my back faced away and Melissa is facing the other way. And she goes, there they are. And we're dead even with them elevation wise. And so since I'm already sitting, I kind of like look through my scope and I'm like, that's it. That's the one. And so Melissa like quickly gets set up.
I've never gotten set up so fast.
Oh man, she was
I was over the rock like ready to go.
It was impressive how quickly she got set. And so they're where they're at, like we have one of the goats like perfect broadside, but if it takes one step to its left, it's gone out of sight, out
up
of mind.
Down, he's like a silhouette on the like line and we're like, oh my god.
Yeah, and we had scoped it out. I thought we did a pretty good job on the way up. Kind of figure out like, okay, right where they are, like if we were to shoot them right there, like they're gonna fall into like this nice shaley draw, like we can definitely retrieve them. So we knew ahead of time like what it looked like behind it and underneath it. And so yeah,
I think you pulled out your rangefinder and all that because it's happening pretty fast and we're like, yep. Oh man, he's in a place where it's like if he moves we're not gonna be able to see him. So I think she ranged it, was it 200 or 180? He was right in there.
I want to say it was like 150. They were close.
Yeah. And it happened so fast. And then he turns and stares at us. And I was like, oh my God, we got to. And so I'm getting set. And I think he turned away his head like he wanted to walk, and I'm pretty sure I yelled.
You did.
I did. I yelled. Yeah. I don't remember what I yelled, but I was like, I need to get his attention.
Hey.
Yeah, because he like he had to turn, like he was like, I'm gonna move on. So he looked back, and I was like, okay, on three, and I just want to. And I looked up, and he just I didn't even see what happened. He just started flying down the hill and tumbling, and we just started jumping up and. I'm pretty sure I yelled, roll, baby, roll. Because all I could think of, like, a goat hunt is, like, you shoot him and he just goes up and flings himself, like, up the mountain, you know, onto a cliff. And so I think the whole valley heard us start screaming and yelling. And we were like, oh, my God, did we just do that? Yeah. And I there was a lot of yelling.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And, yeah. She said, did you see its face? And I was like, no. And she's like, I'm pretty sure it was a little younger. And I was like, really? I'm like, crap. And it wasn't any goat tag. And we didn't have a ton of experience. I did go in and talk to like my friend at the taxidermist, and he was trying to tell me like how to identify a male and a female, but it's actually really difficult out there. I don't know. We didn't have the spotting scope up there. We just had our binoculars. But so anyway, we shimmy down. And we go through the shale and we get to him and we're just like, oh my gosh, he like fell into like a perfect spot. I feel like it couldn't have been the plan went just as planned, and it was like Nani was just hitting her point, which I was like really happy that she said it out loud because it's like important. But she was like, you know, I'm hitting my comfort zone here of like how high we're getting. I'm like, okay, and like it couldn't have came at like a better time because there's the goat. So
yeah. Yeah, those things are hard to judge. Growing up in Southeast, you know, you see people with 4-point bucks. You just count that's just kind of your gauge. So it's you count points, there you go, it's a big one or not. And you can look at spread, but it's pretty obvious. So looking at a mountain goat, the first mountain goat hunt I was on, my buddies were kind of judging it, and it was a really good tag. And so they're looking for trophy genetics, and they're trying to, is this a 50 incher or not? I'm thinking, what in the world are you looking at? Because from 300 yards or even 200 yards, even 150 yards, is it an 8-inch billy? Is it 8.5 inches? Is it not? Who knows? And yeah, it can be tough. The first one I shot was by itself. So we figure, okay, billy. And then saw it go to the bathroom. Okay, it's a billy. And then you walk up. I walked up and I thought, oh, this is not a large billy. It's a billy, but it is not very large.
My mom said, whatever you do, just remember, goats always look bigger in the binoculars. And I was like, same. When we got up to it, I was like, man, it's not as big as like I thought it was. But yeah, and they have so much fur. So I think that also takes away from like actually how big their body size
is. Yeah. And the bone structure too, the two we got this year, like you just look at that, how big the bones are, the gaps between the ribs and the ribs themselves. It doesn't matter if it is a small one, as long as it's legal, man, they are awesome creatures. And it's super awesome when you walk up on it, just unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like the terrain that they hang out in is just so crazy to me. I think they're just underrated creatures that like they're just so tough. We end up getting to it, and we just were like, man, that was, I don't know how that plan worked out so well. And Nani and I were like, I hadn't done the gutless method in a while, and so Nani kind of led us on that one. Because just in Southeast, and a lot of the times in the last couple of years, you know, you got them, but she led me through like the gutless method, which was great. And we shot that thing at 3 o'clock. I think we had it dressed in our backpacks by four. And then it was like, we're looking at our clock and it was like, all right, we'd like to be off the mountain by dark, which in September time, I don't remember what time that was, but I knew it was like, okay, I'd feel safer. We have headlamps to travel down the glacier to our camp, but I want to be off this mountain. Like that's not.
Cause it was not only steep. What like we came up some, it was like 4-point climbing a lot of spots. And then we were seeing a ton of bear sign.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a ton of bears up there. We even flying. I think we saw a couple bears every time we flew that valley. So like, all right.
So we were very motivated to get off. Yeah. And just start like skirting along the glaciers. We're like, let's haul butts so we don't have to go down this in the dark. And we made it. I think we
We made good time, especially going down is a lot easier in the alders and stuff than fighting. But we got to camp, I think, right as we got to get dark. And we were so thankful because I think like a half an hour earlier, I pulled out my headlamp and Nani pulled out hers and it was like, oh.
Mine got flicked on.
Yeah, so it's completely classic flashlight or like headlamp got flicked on. So we only had one. So we were glad that we made it back before dark. And yeah, we were like, did we just do that in a day? We were like, and so I think we ended up, you know, cleaning up the skull that night and kind of got the meat out and got it trying to dry a little bit. And yeah, made a celebratory dinner.
What was the dinner?
It was, I know we had ramen.
Nice.
I think we each cooked
our mountain house.
I think I cooked like two peak refuels, which was I can hardly finish one even if I'm hungry. So it was, yeah.
I don't remember the specific dinner, but I do remember we had the breakfast that probably caused that go home to be successful. It was that peaches and cream.
Yeah, the new peaches and cream.
It's very good. Peak refuel. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's almost too big for one person to go hike a mountain right after, so we shared it, which I'm really glad we did. So
yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, certainly not steaks on a Coleman grill when you're up on the mountains there.
No. I remember just like laying horizontal and being like so excited to be in the tent, just like, oh my gosh, my body hurts.
Yeah.
And I, you know, we packed out that goat and I it was just like, wow. I mean, we both had good size packs. I'm like, man, I can't imagine these people that shoot these ginormous billies and you have the hide and you have all the meat and like it's yeah. So I was humbled.
Yeah. I think part of it too is like when you're getting back down, you're motivated to get back down, but get back down safely. So if you have the time to take the breaks, and a lot of those people take the breaks, they'll go or they'll shuttle meat or whatnot. And that's just part of it. You know, this is going to be what it's going to take. And did you sleep well that night or are you too amped even though you were tired?
I think I'm pretty sure we slept good. I did. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
No, I think because usually I'm really good about eating throughout the day and like drinking enough water. But that day we were just on the move constantly from the time we finally made it up to the goats. Like we saw them, then it was like, okay, stock mode, then like quickly butcher it. So I think by the time we got back, I think I had only eaten like one granola bar and maybe half of a bottle of water. So I felt terrible just because I was like, usually I'm pretty good about eating. Like I normally hunt with my husband and he like always can tell when I'm getting like hangry. He's like, you need to eat your snack. But he can go all day, no problem. But he's usually my built-in reminder, like, hey, you should probably eat something. And so yeah, it was a very nice evening to like consume in calories that were lost. I think when I got home, I mean, I think I had like dropped 5 pounds
in two days, from, yeah.
Really bad dehydration and not consuming calories. So that was not good. But
our tent setup was kind of nice too, because we were like on this like little platform right on the river. And we were able to put the meat like down by the river on this covered it. So I felt like there was air and stuff blowing by. And so it was felt like maybe I slept a little better knowing like the meat wasn't like right in the tree where like, I don't know, like it felt like maybe the smell was going by. So sometimes I get a little nervous with meat out in the woods hanging right next to you. But yeah, we had that little like the next morning. What was that animal that was trying to get into our stuff? It was a little white. It almost looked like a little white mink. What are those called?
Oh, Ermine?
Ermine.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
He was being feisty too. He kept coming at our tent stuff. When we checked the meat, he didn't get into that. But yeah, he was kind of harassing us.
Interesting.
Very weird.
Yeah
I never seen one as well.
We had one get into our house once on accident, but that's a different story.
We picked up a couple of those when we were mink and mart trapping growing up. Little weasel looking things, they're cool, but that's not what we were going for.
Yeah
we so the... a couple of shots at him and he was like not scared, he was just like came back for more. We're like, hey.
So that was the first full day that you were up there. You flew in the previous day, went up there, did that, and then flew out the next day, no big deal, or did you float?
Yeah, so we hiked out that next day, and we were kind of like, it was still kind of like a daze of just like it all happened just so fast. And we were like on the hike out, and we were like, you know, you're so tired, you're also like exhausted, but we're like, we didn't really want it to end that quick. But it like it just like it we pushed really hard, and then the next day we ended up just, you know, we took our time a little more on the way down because our packs were definitely heavier. Yeah, and then we got back and to our the tent in the plane. Luckily, everything was safe and sound there. And then we did two trips out again. I took her and a little bit of the meat and came back and got the rest.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling because if once you see what you're going after, you can't really relish that because you're making the move. And
Yeah.
then you can't relish looking at the animal through the scope because if it's going to take off, you need that to happen. And then you're not really relishing like taking your time afterwards. You don't take 3 or 4 hours of pictures. You got to get to the next step, especially if the sun is going down. And then you want to get back to the tent so you don't relish alders and a heavy pack. And then all of a sudden it's over, and you think, man, now I can relish all of it, but it's all over. It's just a weird experience, but it's unbelievable. Every hunt is so different. You keep going back for that, and it's hard to really take those snapshots or slow down in those moments because they're not really naturally slow moments.
Yeah,
I do remember like one good slow moment where I was like just really like thankful and had a lot of gratitude. We were hiking back down river. Remember the sun came out and we were on that long gravel pit, like walking. And I remember like, we just take a, just like, I think someone was like, we just take a break. We just sat down and just like let our legs sit and we sat in the sunshine. And it was like, oh, this is really nice. Oh, yeah,
Yeah,
like this is.
those pack out breaks tend to be some good ones. When we done went on the fly out for caribou this year, you know, a couple of those moments where we're gonna be hiking meat and shuttling meat all day. So let's just take a little bit and just enjoy it. But then once weather starts coming in, then of course you can't do that. But yeah, looking at the sun, looking around, just really enjoying it and just thinking, it's not everybody gets to do this. And then, you know, it's such an amazing experience, so much fun.
Yeah, and I feel like I really even look back at some of the pictures and I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I just didn't even realize how beautiful like the fall colors were down low. They had that fresh bit of snow on the top of the mountains and it was just beautiful. And like I said, I just like it kind of went so fast. I was like, oh man, that was such a beautiful time of year, especially up here in the in Alaska, that it's like you have a little bit of everything as the season changes. It's nice.
Did you run into those other hunters or talk to them or hear gunshots or anything?
Nope, we did. They were flying out, and we had our. I'm not sure if they saw us, but they were flying out, and we were pulling up the tent, and we gave a huge wave like of excitement, and they gave us a little nod with their wings. So I don't know if they. I know they saw us, but I'm not sure if they acknowledged it or knew that we had gotten one. But the way we were yelling, the whole valley probably heard.
Yeah, probably put the spotters on and watch that. Yeah.
Yeah, they probably did probably watch it tumble and they're like, oh yeah.
Like these girls.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Gotta be so loud.
Awesome. So when you get back, you start telling people what happened. Was it were they excited, surprised for you? What like, oh yeah,
Yeah.
sounds about right with you too.
We were like so jacked. I feel like it just was also, we were like still kind of like in shock mode of like getting delayed, go doing the whole trip. John was like, you're back already? Like, and we were like,
Of
yeah,
course.
we got one. Like, and so he was like, I figured it was gonna take you guys longer. And like, we did too, but like, I don't know, just the plan worked. And like, so yeah, he was pleasantly surprised. And so I think that next morning we started like we hung it and then we started getting after taking care of it and processing it. And so yeah.
What was your get back to town meal? Because you have some good options up there in Anchorage. Ketchikan, there's two spots, about two meals that I'm really looking forward to unless we're cooking something at home.
Do you remember exactly what we came back to?
I think
Did we try the backstrap that
we
night?
had goat backstrap.
Yeah, and
You didn't like go get a burger as soon as you landed or anything like that, then get the backstrap later?
I feel like our
No.
tradition usually is to try like the backstrap. Like I love doing that. We definitely were like, okay, the goat is not like a deer backstrap. It's just a little more tough. But it was really good. I think
and we did burgers the next night, and those were
We did make the goat burgers. That was really good the next night.
We did actually, because Melissa had got her bison, and so we did a blind taste from like bison and goat, and we all got it wrong.
We did?
Mm. Yeah. We side by side, like same seasonings, all of us, we couldn't tell the difference. So it was just a young goat. Tasted amazing.
Did we put the goat fat? Because did we put the goat fat back in, or did we take that one out?
No, John and I overruled you.
That's right. Okay. So usually we the last couple of years we like don't put any fat besides the animal's fat back into the burger. Excuse me. And my mom was like, always just like cook up the fat though before you put it in the burger, just to make sure you like it. And so I was like, all right, we're just gonna put it back in. John was like, let's cook it first. And we cooked it and everyone tried it. I was like, it's fine. And John and Nani looked at each other and were like,
where's the good goat?
So we ended up not putting the fat back in. We didn't add any fat. So it's actually kind of lean, but yeah, it still tastes great and it sticks together okay. I think we add a little more egg to it when we cook it, but yeah.
Yeah, we haven't added much fat to ours. There were a couple of times we added in some pork fat, but for the most part, we just season it and freeze it as it is, and it's fine.
You can't even really tell the difference. We always did that growing up. You know, we would buy like beef fat or pork fat, but like we just started like it's more steps, it's more money, and I feel like it's healthier if you just use what you have on hand.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't make a huge difference. Well, it can, but like it doesn't. It's not that much better that that adding it is what you have to do every single time. We had some mountain goat, some Polish mountain goat tonight, and it was super awesome. It was super lean, but tastes great. You get little seasonings on it and love it. Do you like pre-season anything or have your own seasonings with the ground?
We don't usually. John tried making some sausage since we ended up getting he got off Facebook Marketplace a nice big Cabela's grinder, and he's made some sausage and stuff, but we haven't done any pre-seasoning stuff yet. So
yeah, we went, I think last year we just went straight ground, but this year we tried some of the Polish which is pretty good. So you just get a little bit of a variety. Went Polish, did some chorizo, did some breakfast sausage. So we'll pull out a bag, and you got, all right, we got some breakfast stuff, or we got chorizo for tacos. It's already seasoned. You're in good shape there. So it's kind of fun to mess around a little bit.
Yeah. My mom always does the breakfast sausage, and I'm always like, we got to do it. But I feel like sometimes when you're just like already in the grind of getting everything done, you just kind of do it. But yeah. We've been doing, my boss recommended this, but we've been like 10 times taking like just a decent piece of like steak or meat that you'd normally just write steak on, and then we like chop it up into little bites and then just vacuum seal like that way when like it thaws, just dump it right in the pan and just like throw some seasonings, like steak bites. And they're like,
yeah, we did a couple of those, so you're just fajita ready right there, which is great. But it's nice to just be able to go grab out some meat and then don't have to worry about shopping for it. Every once in a while I get a craving for a chicken or chicken wings.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have just that game meat readily available.
You go eat the chicken, and then it's kind of greasy, and you're like full, and you're like, all right, I've got my fix for the next, month or two.
Good to go for a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's next on the up for this year? Did you draw anything?
No, both of us got nuked, but I feel like my family and myself have gotten lucky the last couple of years, so I anticipate I'll be out for a couple more years.
Cause you went, you had bison, and then didn't your dad draw bison?
Yep.
And then,
yes. My mom, dad got the bison, and then this year I got the goat and the elk.
Go in a fog neck elk.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And she killed the doll sheep.
And I got a deer.
And you got the doll sheep. Yeah. It's funny. Forget about that.
I got
that
a lucky year. I had a really lucky year, and I, like she said that I got them, but like, all I did differently in those hunts was I got to pull the triggers. Like all those hunts were like Nani, my little cousin Brian, my husband. So it was like, it was a really fun year. And I felt really blessed to have like to nearly buy an extra freezer just for the elk.
Yeah. Did you happen to get anything from Brian for your birthday? Because he seemed to win so many things he could afford to
I
give away some
heard.
gifts.
I was telling her about that. Like that guy won like a two-person guided hunt. He won the fly fishing rod, all
Yeah,
kinds of stuff.
every other he was up there all the time. It was crazy.
Yeah. That lucky castle gene thing.
Yeah, I don't know, between drawn things or having your ticket drawn at Trout Unlimited things, it's good to be a castle.
Did you
Yep.
get something, Jeff, at all for tags this year?
No, as per usual,
Okay.
no. So it's just a matter of it's kind of a relief in
Yeah,
that I can
right.
now do
Now you can
exactly,
plan.
there's no obligation. Okay, what do I want to do? How much money do we want to spend to make it happen? And it's, I mean, if we had drawn something cool, we'd make it happen, but not drawing it, it's going to be fine. So,
Yeah. Now
yeah.
you're spending $10,000 on a muskox hunt and you're going to go do something else.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm in a group chat with four people. It's myself and three people, and the three of them all drew really good moose tags. And I thought, how in the world does that happen? That's like next level lack of luck that they all three drew good moose tags, and
And they're
I
all
get
probably like,
nothing.
hey, Jeff, what are you doing? Who needs
Yeah,
backer?
I renamed the group chat. Everyone draws but Jeff.
Yeah.
But
Jeff backer.
yeah, it's fun though, because dude, you're gonna get invited on those hunts anyway, so you're gonna be there. You're gonna be able to experience it, and so it's
Yeah.
yeah, ha having good hunting buddies is it's really important.
It's so important. I feel like this year I got so lucky. Every one of the hunts that I got to do this year, like the partners were so much fun. Like Nani and I had a blast. My little cousin Brian came along and we had a blast with the sheep hunt. My mom went on the elk hunt with us. It feels like there was so many good laughing memories and it was really fun. So good partners make a trip for sure.
Yeah. One of the saddest things, maybe it wasn't sad, maybe my buddy and I misinterpreted this, but we did the Hall Road hunt a couple of years ago, and we saw a guy up there in a U-Haul. So he's probably from down south who went on, somewhere and found out that the best way is to go fly to Fairbanks, rent a U-Haul and drive up there. And it looked like he was by himself, and there was this small little bull that was like crossing back and over the road, and he was kind of chasing it with his bow, and it looked like he was just kind of beaten down and that he was by himself and kind of lonely, and it felt bad. I thought, man, as we were driving, I thought, did this guy just talk to all of his buddies and say, hey, I'm going up to Alaska, will you come with me? And everyone's like, no, I can't, or can't get
Yeah.
off work, or my wife won't let me go, or I can't. I just thought, oh man, that's horrible. Poor guy is just trying to do this by himself. Hopefully it wasn't. Hopefully his buddy was somewhere else.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
having that hunting buddy is so important. I do like some solo hunts now and again, but it's super cool to share that with your husband or with your wife or with your friends.
Yeah, my mom, so we had somebody bail on the elk hunt, like not bailed. Couldn't commit and it kind of bailed like I want to say like 6 weeks before. And so John and I actually almost contemplated on not going because it was like I felt like the hunt was very foreign for both of us. For two people for an elk, everyone kept telling us elk are huge, it's like a moose. I'm like, doing a moose hunt in somewhere we've never been, like on a fog neck with tons of bears, like it's just like it was really out of our element. And so my mom was like, you know what? If this was reverse, I know you would come for me. And so she flew to Seattle, went to a wedding of my cousins that I had to miss. And then her, John, and I all met in Kodiak on like different flights. I brought all the gear. It was like it all came together. But yeah, it's really fun when you have people that are so excited to do this, these kind of trips with you because yeah, it makes for the adventure and it's like the whole point of all of it. So.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think that'll maybe about do it. That's a great story. Love, always like talking and hearing about the other Alaskans enjoying things. So what do you got for rest of the spring? Getting antsy for a spring bear or anything, or just kind of still reliving the year?
What about you? Yeah,
What
we'll be doing, like I said, my husband lives for bear hunting, so we'll be
are you?
getting out doing quite a bit of bear hunting. And it's just a fun excuse to get out on the boat, set some shrimp pots, look for critters, and then August, we're going to be doing the Hall Road caribou hunt again.
Nice.
We did it this past year, but we did it the 2 years in a row before that. And we've really grown to love that hunt. We kind of have it a little bit more dialed in. So we're looking forward to that. Other than that, just chasing blacktails. So
nice.
That's cool. It's good.
Me, my husband, and my little cousin Brian are gonna go go sheep hunting again, and we're gonna try to go get my little cousin one this time. We owe him a good pack out. He did a number for us, so we're gonna do that for August, and then I think we're gonna pop down and try to do some alpine deer hunting. I haven't got to do that in a long time, and I really miss doing that in Southeast. So we're hopefully gonna make it down there in August.
It's all good.
Yeah.
It's always fun to look at the August 1st down here for the alpine deer. It's definitely a date to circle, but those spring bear is a lot of fun too, to just cruise around, like you said, you know, some shrimp pots and do that. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
To this day, if you put like any meat out in front and I like blindly taste it every time I go to deer, drop my husband's always like, you always taste the deer and you're like, that's the best. And it's like, it is. So gotta come home with some roots.
Tastes like home. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, tastes like home.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for sharing the story. Really appreciate it. And glad you two are doing well. And thanks for being on here.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Jeff.
Thank you.